and welcome to another episode of Little Fish. My name is James Harkin. I am joined by Daniel Schreiber.
Hello.
Andrew Hunter-Murray.
Hello.
And we are here with a whole load of your facts. You've been sending them in to podcast@qi.com. Andy has whittled them down to the very, very best. We're going to choose the ones to read out and then we're going to chat about them. Then we'll do some more stuff at the end. Then we'll all go home. You guys are probably already at home. Never mind. Let's go. Who's got a fact?
I've got one.
Go for it.
All right. This one comes in from Fergal Finley. And Fergal says, my fact is that sliced bread was invented on the 7th of July, 1928, whereas National Treasure David Attenborough was born on the 8th of May, 1926. Therefore, sliced bread is, in fact, the best thing since David Attenborough.
Hmm.
And we're off the blocks.
So that's a very small window of David Attenborough being the best thing.
Yeah, and he was only a baby at the time, actually.
Hadn't really achieved too much at that point.
Yeah.
He probably crawled around sort of pointing at his pet tortoise going, here we are.
Just a nice fact about sliced bread and David Attenborough being about the same age.
I think it's always surprising how new sliced bread is.
The
famous fact is that it was advertised as the best thing since wrapped bread.
Yes, that's so good.
And the idea being that you would slice your own bread, obviously, but wrapped bread was good because it would keep it fresh
and it stayed softer.
You wouldn't want to have sliced bread before that because it would just go stale really quickly. Mm. So once wrap bread came in, then you could start slicing it. There was no point having it before then.
And thankfully, no one has ever sliced David Attenborough.
At time of recording.
Very nice. I've got one here from David Byrne. Now, I'm hoping this is David Byrne, lead singer of the Talking Heads.
Maybe.
I mean, he would listen to something like this.
Do you think?
To be fair. Yeah, he's a real nerd.
Is he?
Oh, he's wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah.
David, right.
But other David, who this might be, I'm sure you're awesome too. So,
what's David's head been talking?
It's been saying. He says, my fact is, for the original Predator film, the studio had to hire a bodyguard to follow Sonny Landham around to protect other people from Sonny, as he'd been getting into too many fights on the set.
Oh, who does he play? Is he like one of the
He's one of the main
soldiers.
Yeah, he's one of the main guys. So you've got Arnold Schwarzenegger, you've got Jesse Jackson.
But he didn't play the Predator.
No, right. He didn't.
Jesse Jackson?
Sorry, yeah, I said the wrong name.
The civil rights hero.
You had Jesse Jackson.
Wow. MLK has a cameo, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. And playing the role of Predator in the suit, Mother Teresa. So it's a real hell of a cast. No, Jesse Ventura is who I meant to say.
Okay.
What's interesting is that this guy, Sonny, he actually ran for governor in Kentucky. And had he have got that, he would have been the third cast member who made it into politics as a governor in America.
Oh, because Schwarzenegger did
and Jesse Ventura did as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey.
So he didn't make it, unfortunately.
And he was just very fighty and aggressive.
He was very aggressive and he was a big guy. And he was totally fine on the set, it turned out. It wasn't needed. But the studio, for insurance purposes, thought we better protect this guy from killing everyone else on set. What's interesting as well is someone famous was meant to be the Predator. So if you don't know this movie, it was like an 80s action film, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and there was this monster, it looks a bit like Alien.
But it's kind of mostly invisible, wasn't it?
Yes, it was always a bit of a problem for the film that the baddie is mostly not visible.
But then he kind of comes visible sometimes.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. He can turn it on and off.
And they use, I think, infrared to see him, the body. Or is that how he saw the
future? No, he sees them because they get in the mud and they get really cold and he can't see them
anymore.
That's
right.
Spoiler alert.
That's right at the ending. That's when Arnie's the only one left. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So the original person, though, who was inside the Predator suit that you do get to see at some point was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. And he got fired from the set. And there's a lot of reasons that might have happened.
Well, he had an argument on set with Rosa Parks, I believe, who was being one of the other Marines.
Yeah. Get to the bus. That's from that film. Get to the chopper.
Wonderful.
Yeah. One of the reasons was that he kept doing kickboxing in the suit and they were like, it's just too much.
Oh, right.
It's like Tinky Winky getting fired from Teletubbies.
That's very funny. Yeah.
Okay, very fact. Good. Here is a fact from Michael Bartmeyer. And I'm going to actually take his fact and then give you a different wording of it.
Okay.
Or maybe a question, actually. So how old do you think is the oldest ever immortal jellyfish?
I'll say 121 years.
Okay.
Big bang, right from the go. Right from the origin.
Came out of the explosion of the universe.
Wow. Went, part
what?
Of it.
Wow. Whoa, what is
huge.
This?
Great.
I'm glad you didn't go the other way of trying to spoil the game, because you would have won it. So Michael writes that the problem with immortal jellyfish is they won't stop dying. And he read this in from Maria Pia Miglietta, who's an associate professor of marine biology at Texas A&M. And the thing is that theoretically, immortal jellyfish can live forever. Mm. They become adults, and then when they get in a bit of danger, they become children again. And then they go adult child, amazing. And they can theoretically do it forever. But in laboratory conditions, it's almost impossible to keep them alive. And the reason is, you've got to have exactly the right amount of flow of water. They're really small and delicate. If you put too much water in, they just fall apart. Mm. And if you don't put enough in, they kind of sink down to the bottom and fall apart. And the longest ever that anyone's maintained a colony of them was a guy called Shin Kubota at Kyoto University. And they managed to keep the colony alive for about 2 years. But that was lots of different ones. Yeah. And I don't think that anyone's ever been able to keep an immortal jellyfish alive for more than about a month.
So
isn't
good.
That amazing?
That's very funny.
Because I think we wondered when we covered them on QI all those years ago, why are we not wading through them? If they are genuinely immortal, yeah. Like, why are the oceans not just teeming with them?
Yes,
you
know? Yeah.
Well, it turns out that just if you just look at them, they explode.
So good.
That's brilliant. That's
are we
going
to do anything to alter the name, do you think?
What? Well, they are immortal in theory.
Okay, but, in theory.
You could call them the theoretically immortal jellyfish.
Yeah. That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Tidge.
That's brilliant.
Just one more thing about them. There's a candidate in the Singaporean elections called Turriptopsis dornii, T-O-N Ming. And the first two words of that name is the Latin for a immortal jellyfish. And basically, he's always in every election, but he loses in every election. You know, a bit like Count Binface, or whatever he's called.
Yeah, brilliant.
And so he's changed his first name to the immortal jellyfish Latin name because he's a perennial candidate.
Very nice.
But always good. Completely falls apart. That's lovely. That's brilliant. I have a nautical, oceanic sea life based one as well, actually.
Yes, please.
This comes in from Trevor Lambert, and it's that Great Yarmouth in Norfolk, for international listeners.
Lovely.
Those are both places in the UK.
It's by the sea. It's a place where you might go and retire once the city life has
absolutely
been a bit too much for you.
Yeah, charming coastal place, and they have three river crossings, right? Mm-hmm. That's not the fact.
The River Yar goes through there.
The River Yar, Great Yarmouth. It's at the mouth of the Yar, right?
Oh, Yar mouth. Great.
Yeah, my mouth is telling you that they have a bridge, which they have a third one. It just opened up in 2024. So this is pretty new, exciting stuff because it's avoided a lot of trouble. You used to have to go right around the houses, and now it's made life a lot easier for a lot of people, this new bridge. And Norfolk County Council ran a vote for the name, and it was either going to be the Queen's Gate or the Britannia Bridge or the Yar Bridge or the Herring Bridge, right? Herring Bridge won. Now, that's because Great Yarmouth was a great town for the herring industry, really important. You know, the women who worked in the fishing industry, they were vital to it. Like
Herring girls.
It was one of the most important fishing ports in the whole UK. It was a really important town for that. Anyway, unfortunately, most of the votes saying this should be called the Herring Bridge arrived after comedian Richard Herring told all his followers, name a bridge after me. And then most of the votes came in after that point.
So even though they set up the vote saying this bridge is named after the herring industry, we know that the reason this bridge is called the Herring Bridge, did it win in the end?
Yeah, it won.
Bridge, then the reason it's called that is because of Richard Herring.
Yeah.
So are you going to get him to write the foreword to your book?
Yes.
That's amazing.
He's an example of the thing.
You know an example.
Yeah, that's pretty spooky. Yeah.
That's cool.
So anyway, there you go. And it cost 120 million quid, and it's named after Richard Herring, probably. That's quite something.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, still on nautical. Should we stay in the ocean?
Yeah.
Kay Stone writes, knowing how fond you all are about the weird animal organ called the cloaca, Thought you might enjoy this article published in the New York Times. And she's given a small excerpt here, which says, when danger calls, some animals bare their teeth. Others take to the sky or curl into protective balls. But the remora, a fish that often hitches a ride on a larger marine animal like a sea turtle or whale, sometimes follows a less dignified strategy. It disappears inside a manta ray's rear end. And this is a new discovery. The remora does what is known as cloacal diving. And according to a scientist who looked into this called Catherine McDonald, it does not look like the manta ray likes it.
When you climb up a manta, but you say it's just banter, that's remora.
Yeah, nice.
It's very good.
It's not,
well, it's bad.
It's not bad.
No.
It's not it's, bad.
I didn't say it was. My face just
you
said
looked
that.
Bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is a new discovery. But right. the remora, pretty fascinating animal. It's used for fishing as well, the remora.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a really interesting process because you would attach the remora to your fishing line. You lower it down. It sucks onto the animal below, and then you bring it back up.
Wow.
So it's a sort of reusable bit of bait because you can then take it off and put it back in.
That's incredible. The bait sort of eats the fish in a way.
Yeah, or just holds onto enough of it.
Yeah,
like a turtle, for example, if you're looking to get turtles, you might put a couple of remoras. You might put a few of them.
No.
That's what they
can support the weight
says.
Of a turtle.
Yeah.
Give over.
That's what it says.
Give over. I've never heard such cobblers.
Well, it's cited in a book from 1787.
Oh, wow. Well, in that case, well, yeah. It's 300-year-old knowledge, then. It can't be wrong, can it?
Okay, speaking of fishing.
Oh, yeah.
I have a fact here from Mark Fisher.
Beautiful segue.
And Mark Fisher has given me a fact. I say given me because I think this is one especially for me. Mark says that it takes 6 containers to get 100,000 hundreds and thousands. And Mark attaches the calculations, which I won't subject you all to. But for Americans, these are sprinkles that you put on like fairy cakes and stuff. And Mark has taken a load of them, put them on some scales, weighed how much they each weigh, and then worked out how many you get in each container, and then worked out how many you would need in order to get 100,000. And the answer is 6. And looking at the working out, I absolutely believe him.
Oh,
really?
It's so nice when a fact is not harkened. It's surprising.
No, feel very happy with this. I think the maths is all good. But fancy a game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Realizing that Americans call hundreds and thousands sprinkles, we call them hundreds and thousands.
Yeah.
I've looked at what they're called in lots of other languages, and I want you to tell me whether the following is the translation of a word for hundreds of thousands in another language or an item you can buy on Gwyneth Paltrow's website, goop.com.
Okay.
So, smile makers. Someone's banging away next door.
Sounds like someone's been on goop.com already. I'm going to say hundreds and thousands of smile makers.
Well, I'll go for Goop then.
Dan is correct. Goop.com. Next one, Star Bullets.
Goop. Hundreds and thousands.
It's Goop.
Yes.
Mouse droppings.
These all going to be from goop.com.
You're going to go on a sex toy website and buy some mouse droppings.
Goop.com. Final answer.
Hundreds of thousands, then.
It is. They're called Miesenstrontjes in Belgian Dutch.
That's brilliant.
And
that's
I messaged Leven to ask if that was true, and he said 100%. They're called mouse shit, really,
right,
is what they
right.
call them. Love Pels.
Oh, I'm,
Goop.
Well, yeah, I've got those.
Goop. It is the German word. Liebesspielen for hundreds and thousands.
Brilliant.
Wow.
And finally, Viva la Vulva.
Hundreds and thousands.
Hundreds of thousands. That was on my son's 5th birthday cake.
Can you believe she's got a sex toy called Viva la Vulva?
Well, her husband, exactly. Yes, Chris Martin, former husband.
Yeah.
He had an album that was called
Viva la Vida.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very clever.
That is good.
That's fun. I think that's fun.
I wasn't keeping scores.
I don't think anyone
cares.
I would just say they're not called hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds and thousands.
That's what I'm saying. They're not called hundreds of thousands. They're not claiming there are hundreds of thousands in every one. I mean, if they were being really accurate, they'd call it 16,000 roughly.
I know what you mean. But I suppose if you call them hundreds and thousands, then the word hundreds becomes a little bit obsolete. Because yes, having a thousand true. Implies that there's at least 100.
That's true. It's a bad name. Love Pearls is much better. Here's one from Sarah Logan. This is about something that uses water. So it's very interesting. They sort of group themselves, the facts. Like, we had a load of naval fish-based ones in the same week, and they just sort of bunch together.
Do you think it's that, or do you think you're just shoehorning them into that category?
Can't be that. Let's go to Sarah's fact. Sarah Logan writes, she listened to a very old episode recently where we were excited to learn about the song played at the end of a Samsung wash cycle, Die Forelle by Schubert.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that does, it's about some kind of fish, isn't it? I think it is. It's the trout.
Oh, is it?
I think it might be. Right. Yeah.
He definitely did one called the trout. I don't know if it's the same one.
Well, the bizarre thing is there are many models of Fisher and Paykel top-loading washing machines that, with the right prompting, will play you the New Zealand national anthem.
What?
Okay. Isn't that good?
Yeah.
It's just an Easter egg. They've got a couple of national anthems loaded in. But
really?
If you get the right buttons on your right washing machine, it'll play you Go On New Zealand or whatever the national anthem's called.
Go On New Zealand?
Well, I don't know it. I don't know the name.
Do they have them all? Do you know?
No, I think it's just Go On New Zealand.
Deutschland Uber Alles.
That's the one.
That's the one you've got, of course. Have we established that you're quite into Hitler at the moment? In previous episodes?
I don't think I'm into Hitler, I wouldn't say.
No.
But I'm a Second World War history buff.
Yep.
I'll go that far. Dan's got all the stuff in his shed.
Nice try, buddy. Nice try.
One more fact before we go on to custodianship.
Yeah. I've got one here from Sebastian Bro, who says, my favorite fact is that the heat released in the Manicouagan impact crater was so intense that it took between 1,600 and 5,000 years before the melted rocks cooled.
Yeah,
is that the dinosaur one in Mexico?
It was.
Oh, I thought that was called Chicxulub.
That's the big one. But this was during the time of the dinosaurs.
Oh, okay.
It was near the end of the Triassic period. It was an asteroid that was 5 kilometers wide, and it hit what is now Canada today. And it kind of create. You can see it from outer space, and it's kind of one of those shots that a lot of astronauts on the ISS like to get a shot of, because there's a visible ring of water.
It's the Annular Lake.
Yes,
I do know this one. Yeah, yeah.
The Eye of Quebec.
It's an island because the land raised as well, and then I think the humans diverted some water there or something. But what happened is you've got an island with a lake around it, and the area of the island is larger than the area of the lake that it's in.
Don't like it. What do you mean?
If you take your cup that's on that round coaster,
the area
of the bottom of the cup is bigger than the area that you can see of the coaster.
Yeah. Nice.
Isn't that cool? I think I'm almost certain it's that one.
Eye of Quebec metal.
Yeah.
So cool.
And really amazing that distance of time for something.
It was cooling down for 5,000 years.
Up to 5,000 years. Yeah. And
that's amazing.
And this was a fact that Sebastian sent
I'd give it 5,000 years if I were you.
By the way, I think it was because it wasn't the asteroid itself, the rocks from that was hot. I think it's what it exposed underneath, and it sort of melted that and created that. But yeah, this fact, Sebastian found it from this guy's website. He's called Crater Explorer, and it's a fascinating website. I highly recommend, if you're interested in this kind of stuff, to go, because it's quite old school. So it's one of those sites where this guy's just put everything on there.
He's the crater creator.
Curator of creators.
Content creator.
Doesn't quite work, does
it? No. Creator curator works like a charm. Yeah.
We'll go with that.
What does he go with?
Creator Explorer.
Yeah, probably why. He probably tried all these other ones and they didn't quite work.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that fact, Dan. Thank you for all your facts, Andy. But actually, thank you most of all to the people at home who sent the facts in. And we are going to thank you back by giving you some of our old facts in the form of our curatorship. If you would like one of these facts, then all you have to do is go to patreon.com/clubfish, join at the top level, which is friend of the podcast, and we will give you your own fact. Okay, which of you guys is going to give us the first curatorship today?
I'll dish one out to Randall Cleaver. And it's that every second a star in the universe explodes.
I think it'd be tired by now.
Very good.
Yep. No, it's a different star each time.
It's a different star every time.
Do you know Betelgeuse is going to explode soon?
I didn't know that.
Expect.
What does that mean for us?
Might be a good light show in the sky.
Wow.
But when we say it's going to explode soon, does that mean that the light will reach us in kind of 400 years?
Well, we don't know if it's exploded 500 years ago.
Right.
Because the light hasn't reached us yet. But certainly it's well overdue and it's doing some funky stuff.
Oh.
Like sending off different colors and stuff that we think that it might go soon. Wow, and when it does, it'll be worldwide news because it's one of the most obvious stars in the sky.
Yeah.
It'll be a supernova.
But it might have happened 400 years ago, but we don't know.
Absolutely.
That's exciting.
Do they think possibly within our lifetime?
It could happen tomorrow.
Oh my goodness.
It could happen before this show goes out. It could have happened.
Oh,
or probably after we've all long gone.
Yeah. Wow. Will it be a bright sky?
It'll be very noticeable. You might be able to see it in daytime.
Oh, that's cool. That is very cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great fact.
That is an amazing fact.
Yeah.
Here, let's give another one out. James, why don't you do this one?
Okay, this next one is under the curatorship of Fiona Maguire Jennings. Oh, that isn't hard at all. I don't know why you didn't want to read that out. The fact is that the Tlatelcamilpa cannibals of ancient Mexico ate the human flesh with chili sauce.
Really nice.
Great.
Really nice. Wow.
It's supposed to taste like pork, isn't it? Human flesh.
Is it now?
Long pig.
Oh, I've heard long pig. Yeah. James, you must have tried it at some point on your
human
travels.
Flesh.
You must have
tried.
You've tried all so much creative stuff.
Can I just say, because I edited the Jamie Martin podcast earlier this week, and just for the record, I have not eaten a dog's penis.
Well, have you ever been to a Greg's?
I've never been to a Greg's.
Oh, then you may have avoided it altogether.
They do vegan dog's penises there, don't they? In fact, I cut it from the main show, so if you're watching this, you might not remember it. It's in the XL version, which you'll only get if you're a member of the middle tier of Clubfish.
Yeah.
I have eaten bull's testicles,
which
is what you were half remembering.
Was it Andy?
I can't remember.
I think it was Anna who said that I'd eaten maybe the penis of a Labrador.
Wow, she went for a specific breed. What a false memory to have of James that you're just happy to put out on a podcast. James has eaten Labrador dick. Labradoodle dick.
Labradoodle?
Was it Labradoodle?
A Labrador's doodle. I think that's how she introduces me to her friends.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, my friend James is coming around. Oh, yeah. Oh, you'll remember him. He's the one who I... Oh, dear.
Oh, my God.
All right, let's do another
There's nothing wrong with Greg's. Right, let's do another one. Dan, do you want to...
Yeah, this is Emma Wood. You are now the custodian of dogs aren't allowed.
We're doing a 2-mile radius of James's place.
Dogs aren't allowed at Selwyn College, Cambridge, so the master's Basset Hound has been reclassified as a very large cat.
Lovely.
That's really good.
Lovely.
And was this the one also with Byron's Bear, maybe?
Oh, the same college. Cambridge was the same.
Yeah. I don't know what college he went to, but...
He was at Cambridge, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah.
I don't think he was at Selwyn.
But similarly, he wasn't allowed some animal, but he was allowed a bear, is that
right? That's something like it. That's the story. I've never known how true it is, and I've never wanted to check. You know, it's one of those too-good-to-check ones,
Yeah.
if you know what I mean.
Well, at what point can you keep a bear, in theory, until it turns on you?
Have you ever watched Gentle Ben?
No. What's that?
It's a TV show, maybe? Or a movie? No, it's a TV show, I think, from America about a family that has a bear. But he's very gentle, hence the name.
And it doesn't turn on them.
Well, season 7 is called Vicious Ben. At that stage, things do go a bit awry.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't turn on them.
Should we have another one?
Yes.
Please.
This one goes out to Yanis Vermack. Yanis, your fact is, according to the diary of the first chief of MI6, this is how the first day went. Quotes, went to the office, saw no one, nor was there anything to do there.
Wow, they're good, those spies, aren't they?
Yeah.
As soon as he left, they all were hiding behind the plant pots going, ha-ha!
That should be it. He should walk into an empty office every day, and if he spots anyone, they're fired.
Yeah, brilliant.
You're not good at your job, buddy. This was It was called Mansfield Cumming. And this was a book that when I first started QI, I bought this book just called C, which was all about him. And it was the most enjoyable thing of just finding all these incredible facts about this one human. Yeah. Something we love doing on Fish all the time. He used to have a wooden leg and go around on a scooter. And I think he was busted when he went into Germany once trying to pretend to be a soldier, but didn't speak a word of German.
Yes, that was
and was busted immediately when they said hello to him.
You think you'd at least learn hello.
You'd think you'd have that.
Yeah. I mean, it's hello. No, it's not.
I went in and went, bonjour. Oh, shit.
Oh, lovely.
Okay, here is one more. This one is going out to Connie Ball. And Connie, your fact is that there is a distillery in Kentucky that claims playing Bruce Springsteen to the whiskey improves the aging process.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
That happens a lot now. You hear a lot of these studies where rock and roll is used, or
I remember they played metal to sperms for the IVF process.
Wow.
Yeah, there was also in Japan, I think it was called Rising Beethoven Bread, something like that, where you would play Beethoven to the bread, and
wait, why didn't they call it Beethoven's? Why do I have to do all the work around here?
Hovis.
Hovis
is not the name of a bread company in Japan.
Well, God, do I? But just, do you know what I mean?
What about Beethoven?
Beethoven. Very. That's better.
Beethoven. There's a lot to do here.
Who thought this name would give so much to the world of bread and ovens?
It's just ridiculous, isn't it? You know, we're out here every day creating value that's not being picked up.
If these people were still trading, because I'm sure they're not, and they heard this, do you think they'd think, we need to change our name, guys?
Biggest forehead slap of all time.
Yeah.
Do you think?
They're probably saying, maybe if you had the brains of these guys, we would still be operating, honey. Rising Beethoven bread. What a dumb name.
Beethoven. Perfect. Let's have another. This one goes out to Rupert Davis. Rupert doesn't actually have Patreon. But he's 10.
Okay.
But it has been arranged on his behalf.
You enjoyed all the dog penis talk.
sorry, Rupert. Sorry, Rupert's parents.
Sorry, everyone who's listening. Sorry.
Absolutely. Yeah. But Rupert, your fact now and forever is that there is a statue of Nikola Tesla in Silicon Valley which radiates free Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's still there. And this is just a great fact about Nikola Tesla, the mad scientist, the original mad scientist almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very
and,
cool.
Lover of pigeons. Inventor of death rays. Oh, and man. Purveyor of Wi-Fi.
Purveyor of Wi-Fi. The man who invented the 20th century, as he's sometimes known. Congratulations, Rupert.
We got another one here. This is going out to Jason Kidd. I wonder if that's Jason Kidd, the basketball player.
Probably.
Nah. A third of people in Britain have written almost nothing by hand in the last 6 months.
Wow.
This fact went out in 2017. Do we reckon there's been a great renaissance in handwriting since then?
I suppose not.
I think it might be more people who have written very little by hand in the last 6 months since then.
Okay, one more, I think, for today. And that fact is now under the custodianship of Tom Vyart. And Tom, your fact is that the first man to swim the English Channel later had a show where he floated in a tank for 2 hours.
Wonderful. Matthew Webb?
Yeah, Captain Webb.
Captain Webb.
Or was it David Blaine? I can't remember.
Did he drown?
Captain Webb.
I feel like Captain Webb eventually drowned doing something.
Did he?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure about that. The first thing that came into my head was the first person who went over the Niagara Falls, or first man maybe who went over Niagara Falls in a barrel died after slipping on an orange peel.
Yes.
Archibald Leach. But yes. Captain Webb, I don't know whether he died or not. I know that he basically just went on doing swimming tricks for quite a while. And obviously you can't sell tickets to people to see you swimming long distances because they need to be on the boat to follow you, right?
Yeah.
So you have to do like lots of acrobatics and stuff, I think.
I've just checked. I'm afraid he did drown.
Did he?
Niagara Falls.
What? Did he? That's probably why the Niagara Falls thing came into my head.
Yes.
And I'm just going to say it's Bobby Leach, not Archibald Leach. Oh, Archibald Leach was Cary Grant. That was his real name.
You know what? All these facts are in my head, but they just all mix up different ways.
I love that as a show. You can't bring the English Channel to the stage, but you can bring a little tank of water and show what you look like in the water. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing innovation.
And I can confirm that audiences like to see someone struggling and treading water for an extended period of time, because I sometimes do the intros and outros for this show.
And it might be time for another one of those now. So thank you so much to Tom, Jason, Rupert, Connie, Janus, Emma, Fiona, and Randall. Thank you so much for becoming custodians of facts and for supporting No Such Thing as a Fish on Patreon. If you would like to do so too, go to patreon.com/clubfish and you can become a friend of the podcast there. Or if you would like us to read out some of your facts, send them to podcast.qi.com and Andy will save all the best ones for himself and send all the other ones to the rest of us.
Busted.
And then we will read them out on Little Fish. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Andy and Dan, for being here.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
About time someone thanked me. Goodbye.